Hey, it's Dieter and Jake on a Sunday night after the 49ers just put in their best shift of the year. Jake, did you put in your best shift of the year today?
I put in a pretty good shift.
Okay.
I would not say my best.
What was your best shift of the year?
Maybe it was my best shift of the year, but I don't feel like I came in with enough juice to say it was my best shift, you know?
It was a low energy game to start, and the 49ers were not picking up on the vibes of the proletariat or the bourgeoisie who were at the game today, my friend. They put a whooping on them. That is exactly what I have been asking for. I didn't even get the full brunt of it. I'm still just counting it. The special team sucked again today. I don't know what Jake Moody was doing.
At least they sucked in an interesting way where Jake Moody was discernibly experimenting. He was taking a driving license.
Range. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just like trying to hit some
punch shots. What is
it? Punching it, but like trying to put some spin on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looked
like me at the driving range, just kind of topping them. Nothing. It was something else. But even in that, I'm going to give them credit because, Jake, there's no way that we can look at 319-4, which was the yard differential in the first half of this game, and not call this what it was, an ass-whooping of the highest caliber against a team that, frankly, felt like a plant. There was some real Washington Generals energy to the Bears today.
It felt like... So coming in, it's like, all right, the Bears, they fired Matt Eberflus, right? So are they going to turn this thing into a team that's, you fired your head coach, you got a young team, you're energized, riding that high.
Yep.
Instead, what we found out is Matt Eberflus is pretty good at this whole defense thing. And the Bears were like, we're going to do this. We're going to run like cover three and match zone, except no one's going to match. And we're just going to let George Kittle and Juwan Jennings just absolutely demolish us. And the 49ers are like, this is not to take anything away from the 49ers,
no.
But the Bears gave them probably the best look defensively that they could have possibly asked for. They ran like very little like press man coverage.
Yep.
If at all,
if any,
I saw some that it would be Jalen Johnson would press a couple times, but I didn't see much outside of that.
He's a good player. He's a good
player. So is Kyler Gordon, their nickel.
They started attacking him a little bit in the past game because he is more of a run stopper. Let's just answer the question from the title. This feels like a one-off because the Bears were so wholly incompetent on both sides. It is not to take away from the performance because the Niners maximized an opportunity that was presented to them. Again, you can't look at anything the Niners did. 7 sacks, 315 yards of differential in the first half. Like, they took full advantage. That's awesome. All the credit in the world to them. I needed to see it. I needed to know I didn't get completely bamboozled by this team. Because even though we weren't in any way optimistic about them, it's nice to know that they have still that level of not even ceiling or anything like that. Just like they can execute at an efficient, ruthless level.
Right.
It's nice to
see. It made us feel a little less insane about how insane we were going watching that.
Right.
Because it was so many weeks of understanding what this team was capable of and knowing that the Dallas Cowboys third quarter shouldn't have been just a one-off thing.
Right.
And we went through so many weeks of stopping, starting, you know, the offensive line breaking out. You know what set the tone right off the bat? I saw the cleanest pocket I've seen for Brock Purdy all game long on that first drive.
That's a great
where
call.
No one from the Bears came even remotely close to pressuring him. And I talked to Jake Brendel after the game, and there was a lot made of all the pre-game speeches. I think it was Purdy and Diamador Lenore gave speeches. They used to do it in the early days where they would have players speak. Mm-hmm. And then they realized it didn't actually do anything. It was kind of a rah-rah thing. And then you get desperate and you go, maybe we need the weird rah-rah thing.
Why don't you all talk about what football means to you? How about you eat my shorts?
Right. And so they did all that. But Brendel was like, we were finishing. We were playing until the whistle, which, you know, implies that they hadn't been doing that. And Kittle basically came out.
Pop Warner shit.
he basically came out and said it. He's like, yeah, we, you know, I've played on teams that are desperate and I'm not going to single anyone out, but we weren't doing that. So,
yeah. And listen, I'm not in any way implying that today was some sort of last hurrah for the Niners either. It's, again, just refreshing to see that they have the ability to execute, because I did. They were a bad football team. They might still be a bad football team. Their evidence points far more to bad football team than good football team. But last year, they were an exceptionally good football team, and it was just getting hard to believe that in the course of 1 year with the same quarterback and the same offensive coordinator, and I know a lot of other changes, that it could all fall apart that dramatically. So it was nice to see it, but I'm going to go with one off on the basis of the Bears dropping back into cover three as if it was the preseason repeatedly. George Kittle just being like, I'll just go behind these linebackers over here.
Right. It reminded me of like the early-ish days of like 2019 when the Niners were just, every time they'd play zone, they just demolish it.
Yeah.
And that's just how it felt, right? Like it seemed extraordinarily easy. And yeah, the Bears have been spicy.
A lot of people saying that, but the Bears were spicy and they had their defensive coordinator employed.
Right.
I think this is the thing. They didn't call any defenses today. they ran the way it's late.
You got it.
I'm doing great, you guys. It's like they were playing Madden or NCAA practice mode, and they were just cover three. Like, there's no difference.
Right. You're just a Madden suggested coverage, whatever it is.
And let's, yeah, as I say all the time, Kyle's offense was created to beat cover three. They play cover three because Kyle built an offense to beat cover three. They trust that cover three is the most difficult defense to beat. Kyle has an offense to beat it. It laid out perfectly. So I thought that was great. They have a god-awful offensive line, as you pointed out in the preview show on Friday, the Bears do. They're playing Matt Pryor at guard, because at this point, why not?
Remember Matt Pryor, who was the 49ers swing tackle, who they're
people don't. He was the He was the backup to the swing tackle.
The backup swing tackle. Where, you know how, he wasn't a swing tackle. He could only play at right tackle.
That's right. No pun intended.
So they moved him to guard. It was hard. It's hard to watch the Bears. And as much as I sort of was like, Caleb's not a very good quarterback at this point, which I stand by, he's got his work cut out for him, because they got wrecked.
After two drives, that should I be feeling pity for Caleb Williams? Because I feel pity for Caleb.
He made
Williams.
One great progression. Not great. I mean, just a reasonable progression. I was like, oh, there he goes.
Look at this guy. You could do it, kiddo.
It was a game where it was like, all right, where the Bears screwed up is Matt Eberflus should have been fired before the season. Should have thrown the bag at Ben Johnson. Hired any offensive-minded coach you possibly could have. And then they get into the season, and they're sort of competitive, and they're rolling, but they're also not rolling, and Caleb looks like he's panicking and questioning his own existence every other game. And then Eberflus has, like, the worst gaffe I've seen from a head coach in a long time.
Which one was that? Because he had a few.
This would be where Caleb gets sacked, and he doesn't call the timeout, and they just, like, let the game end.
Yeah,
because they've botched it. So there's that. And so he gets fired, right? And you go, all right, that's fair. And then and it's like one thing if the offense for them looked good, right? Because Thomas Brown's sort of he's the offensive mind.
He wasn't even that. He literally got promoted to offensive coordinator and then 17 days later got promoted to head coach.
It's awesome.
They didn't have anybody to take over. I want to give everyone a little bit of a peek behind the curtain here. So
I know where you're going with this.
It was a feisty press box today, right? So we don't cheer in the press box, but we certainly make snarky comments.
Snide comments, very critical.
Those are not
critical.
Prohibited at all. It is Mystery Science Theater 3000 up there. And I'm a very loud rendition of that. There's a lot of other, like, I'm not alone in that in the Snark Fest. We are eviscerating the Chicago Bears on the 49ers press row. Sitting at the end of the 49ers press row, GM Ryan Poles and his front office staff, just silent, just staring into the distance, wondering what he has done to deserve this fate. At a certain point, I'm like, you know, Jake and I can help. We can help you.
Genuinely. We should have chatted him up and been like,
I'm not kidding. I looked for a window and he was not given one.
Have you ever seen
a bodyguard situation there? No, usually they sit right above me in the press.
Yeah, room, that was weird. That was weird.
Even funner because then they have to hear me. Boy, like they see me and hear me. Otherwise, I'm just this disembodied voice at the end of the line. Josh Dubow absolutely lit up the Bears for celebrating that interception late.
Oh my God.
Just lit them up. And it was so funny to look at the end of the row. I did one of these just to take a look. And they just look straight ahead. Don't let them know that you're crying.
For those who are not familiar with what we're talking about, at the end of the game, when it was an arm punt, by the way, so there was no actual advantage to the Bears. It was just
it was a terrible throw.
Brandon Allen just launching an absolutely garbage deep ball to Jacob Cowing, overthrows him by a few yards, looked like training camp all over again. And you know, Jonathan Owens picks it off, nice play. I'm not against celebrating, you know, whatever. It's a lost season, but it was.
There's a line.
There's celebrating. There's being like celebrating, and then there's running to the end zone, spending 20 to 30 seconds with the entire defense in tow, showing off the ball, like faking out a fan with the ball.
Yeah, the fake photography shit. It's bad.
While you're down 25 points with less than 2 minutes to go, because I think sometimes we can overblow like how people react and celebrate.
100%.
We can make too much of it.
Yeah.
This screamed to me.
So
this team is so unbelievably cooked. They don't care. This team folded like a lawn chair. He got one pick and they're like, hell yeah, we got a pick. The season doesn't matter. We don't have a coach. None of this matters.
No
this
parents.
This is a stupid season.
No Let's parents.
Simmer the rest of the way. That's what it felt like.
I mean, yeah. And then Ryan Poles is sitting up there thinking about how he has to fix this team.
He's disassociating is what he's doing.
I kept legitimately walking past to see what was on his laptop, and I'm not going to lie, it looks a lot like our notes.
That's so awesome.
Jake, I've now had two extremely – this is sounding like it's tooting our own horn, and we absolutely don't have the pedigree or the experience to do this. But come draft time, just know this, everybody. If you watch the Hard Knocks with the Giants, I promise you Jake and I would not do a good job, but we can do better. And I'm not certain that we can't be better than Ryan Poles. We're setting a very high bar here for excellence in the NFL, the Bears and the Giants. But I think that if any owners are out there, I think Jake and I can do better.
You know,
I think we can at least get you the fourth draft pick.
You know, the thing about it is there's so much, I don't know, there's so much verbiage that's like, the Niners have their gold helmet thing. Every team has some absolutely absurd sort of descriptor where he's like, it's not blue chip, it's like he's a guy you want to bring home, you know, you want to be like some sort of weird descriptor about their toughness that goes beyond. You can be like, because you got to value toughness,
it's all the they're all gold star guys, they just come
but
up with a stupid name.
But the more a team goes, he's just like a character guy that fits in with our identity, the more you're talking about that and less like this guy can actually play football, the less I take you seriously and believe you're doing a good job. So I'm not saying the Bears are a team that does that, but there are teams around the league that have a lot of weird stuff going on where it's just a bunch of random superlatives that have nothing to do with playing the sport of football.
Yeah.
Maybe we draft for the Bears too.
I mean, that's neither here nor there. I think that this is another case in point on things actually weren't as bad as some, and I will never say us, suggested. When we talk about the team itself and the product they had put on the field. We were the first one sounding the alarm that they were putting bad tape on the field. That's correct. A very different thing than the core of the apple being rotten. And we never implied that that was the case. We've pointed out that they've drafted poorly, that they've done poorly.
We said that like this could go wrong. And that's why you have to be competitive down the stretch, because it's hard to set the standard going forward if you just fold. And then it's harder to ramp that thing back up, which is something I ripped off from you in my column.
Not a problem at all. Happy to do rips back and forth. That's the idea. We're passing the bong. We're just rips back and forth. So that's why this game was important.
Shout out Laramie Tunsil. Sorry, go on.
Should we get a gas mask? I can't do it. It's too heavy these days. It's neither here nor there. They make a nice tea now, though. And like, that's the most old wash thing ever. But like,
that is pretty washed.
Yeah, it's pretty washed, but it's also pleasant. What was the point? Oh, yeah, it's good that they played good football.
Right. Because
we needed to see them play good football. And frankly, they needed to see themselves play good football. And there's a confidence level to this. And we're not going to go and tell you that they're in the driver's seat, folks. Like, we're not going to lie to you about this. It's going to take a miracle. That's not happening. It's not happening.
They need the Seahawks to collapse. They need a bunch of games to go their way. They need to basically win out and for the Seahawks, too.
And they have to go to Miami. They have to. Miami's a feisty team on the road. Those air miles are real. Ask the Bills, who just lost it to the Rams. Then you get Detroit Monday Night Football. Arizona itself won't be, that easy.
Who
knows what this Thursday game's going to be? That's going to be a shit show.
Thursday night is an absolute toss up. But the Rams, when they have Puka and Cooper Kupp and Stafford doing the absolute nonsense thing where they're just like, we're going to go for an unlimited amount of yards.
It could go.
This is not any direction. It's like, it's pretty tough. I also think that Miami game, it's a pretty bad matchup for this defense where it's speed and not tackling. I guess, Greenlaw's coming back Thursday, which is wild.
Well, I'll say this. It's not a mea culpa because he put 13 bad games in a row, or 12 bad games in a row together, but Devondre Campbell was really good today. Like, he was like legitimately excellent. D. Winters was legitimately excellent today. Both of those guys knew that Dre Greenlaw was coming back and needed to put something good on.
Yeah. Also,
Hufanga, fantastic.
Another point. They just straight up benched Jair Brown for Talano Hufanga, and it wasn't like a rotation. It was straight up benching.
It's over.
And we were like, another great game from Jair. This was like they really knew he's been playing poorly. And Hufanga, I will say, he does bring an energy. As much as he's like a liability in coverage a lot of the time, there is something when you're a team that is juiceless to having Mustafa and Hufanga as your safeties.
I mean, just call him Touchdown Brown, because the second he came in, as J49 brings up, I mean, the Bears are just like, found our guy. I think that the Bears, I'm not half kidding about this, Jake. I think that the Bears thought that Jair Brown was going to play the whole game, based the entire game around attacking Jair Brown. And when he wasn't in there, they're like, I don't know what to, they didn't have a second plan. Doesn't that sound
They just feed DJ more, and when the screens don't work, it's not pretty limited. Also, let me just mention this. They started off, they opened the game with a touchdown drive, right?
First time since the Rams in week three.
First time since the Rams in week three. Hadn't done it. It's literally the second time this season that they've opened with a touchdown drive. At this point last year, they had 8 opening drive touchdown drives, and they finished with 10 on the year. That, from a fundamental point, is sort of where they operated, because they would start out, they would be rolling, they would be effective, and then from there, like, the running game is working, your offense is clicking, your blocking schemes, all your detailed blocking schemes are all working. If you can't get off on the right foot, they punted. Let me just read an order of how their opening drives have gone this year. Punt, punt, touchdown, punt, punt, field goal, punt, 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 field goal, touchdown. So that's sounds like a fundamental issue of like their whole stop start thing. They just have never been able to actually function.
Yeah.
So to do that, And if they can do that against the Rams or other teams, they got a chance.
Jake, I will posit to you that this was the first game that they had a competent offense on the field this season, because it's the first game that they've had a running back who could do everything that they want the running back in this system to do. I know that Christian McCaffrey played a couple of games, but he wasn't the same dude. He just simply wasn't. And I know that wasn't.
I disagree a little bit. I think the Packers game, they got destroyed. The other game was the snow game. And so like the offense wasn't. So both those games, the offense was like dysfunctional. And but in the one game, the Seahawks game that he was back for, you're right. He wasn't the same. And he admitted it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think if he was in this game
for Tampa.
Yeah, he was back from Tampa. Didn't quite look right.
But he was a pass catcher in that game. This was the first game where you have the pass catching element, because Garrido looked fantastic as a pass catcher. Outstanding. Two chunk plays. Incredible stuff. And then he looked
insane catch on that one deep one in the sun where Purdy just lobbed it and he was under pressure and it underthrew him, but just gave him a chance.
It was fantastic. It was really good stuff. And then, listen, it wasn't the sexiest game as a runner, but he averaged 5.1 a clip. Like,
yeah, he's taken some shots. He has taken. Yeah,
I'm thinking that's going to be a thing. I think that because he runs so upright when he gets hit, he goes down top first. And I think it's just going to look really dramatic.
They think he might have a foot sprain. So that could be this thing is still cooked. It doesn't really matter. But we just want to see Garrido continue to play. Somebody asked about him in the passing game. It'll be interesting, like, assuming he's good. Thursday is a tough turnaround for any injury. We'll see. But how they balance the fact that he is a massive liability in pass protection.
Oh, my God.
But also, you get the ball in his hands in space, and he's...
game breaker.
It makes it so difficult on you. I do think because he is upright, and because he runs into the hole full speed ahead, he does take a lot of those shots, and that's why I think
that's what she said.
He doesn't bounce off of stuff as easily, but he's starting to get going. He's really starting to get going,
I'll tell you who didn't get going today, and this is the reddest of all red flags. His name is Deebo Samuel. He had 5 carries for 13 yards, which included an 8-yard run, which was actually rather nice. And you're like, oh, hey, there's Deebo. Like a nice jump cut. He had 2 catches for 22 yards. One of those was a 20-yard catch. And he did a 48-second press conference after the game where he was very terse and didn't want to talk. Just great captain shit right there.
So you know what I was thinking about? I think Jennings hadn't talked in a while, and he said something about criticism. I was like half listening, and I was like, this is whatever. The Bay Area media is like pretty soft.
Super soft.
So
I stand out as a hard ass and I'm soft as fuck.
I'm just saying to like, whatever, you can do whatever you want. I'm just saying to be like that sort of off-putting and as if like people are out to get you when this is like one of probably the easier markets in the country, I think is notable. What do you think?
I think that the fundamental issue is that the Bay Area media market doesn't stand out as a media market in and of itself. So, like, in Philadelphia, you actually have to worry about the media market. In New York, you have to actually worry about the media market. Those brands still have prestige and power, whereas here, it's such a diasporic clusterfuck where you have the San Jose paper and the East Alameda paper and San Francisco and Sacramento and all this shit. So, you have all that. The problem is these... People don't Juwan Jennings and Deebo Samuel and Dominic Poon, no one who's in an NFL locker room who has shoulder pads is taking in the media. What they're doing is taking in this shit and tweets and Instagram posts. And it's cesspool. It's never been nice.
Kyle last week being like, don't go online. You're going to be deeply unhappy.
Correct.
And he mentioned that he's like, I try to talk to players about that. And, you know, it's hard as guys get, you know, as new generations come in, you're more online. It is. And I imagine it's really tough once your brain is just like wired to check that.
It is, you know, so you have at Hutch Diesel on X under your name. Like, I don't do Twitter. I don't do Instagram. I don't do any of it anymore. I'm not saying I'm better for it. I don't know anything.
You are doing that a little bit.
No. Like, I don't know anything that's going on. It's kind of problematic. I'm very reliant on the group text, and that's not reliable narration.
Yeah.
But like, I have a hard enough time with the goddamn chat. You know, like,
yeah,
we're all people.
Yeah.
And part of the ball game of being in the media or being a professional athlete, not that they're the same, but they're both performative in nature, is that you expose yourself, not in a pervy way, but in an emotional way, to an audience. And you there's a vulnerability to it. And it is very difficult. And I can empathize to a degree with the Deebo Samuel, who is playing like dog shit. And is getting criticized by strangers and people who are effectively strangers. And that has to suck. That has to suck. You know what would make it feel a little bit better? $25 million.
I'm with you.
I wish we had that problem.
I'm with you. It's something where I get it, because it's like he knows, right? He knows he's not.
I appreciate and that I
think,
he knows.
And I think that's number one where it comes from. It comes from a place of like, get off me, like, I know. But it is just like, I tweeted it out on the machine you don't have, but I tweeted out there, that basically Deebo, every year prior, you could almost guarantee that he would either break a tackle or make somebody miss. Oh. Every single time he's getting tackled by the first tackler, and that was never the case for Deebo. And so I think we should move on, because the Deebo topic's not all that interesting in a game and that there's plenty more to talk about. But he...
Right.
Once again, out of all the players on the field, skill positions, was deeply underwhelming.
So when you think about what made this game feel so quintessentially, or maybe even vintage Niners, it's again because the Bears were consistently playing zone coverage with their linebackers, cover one, cover three, linebackers dropping into coverage, letting dudes run behind them. And now you're in a situation where you get yak yardage because it's not man-to-man. It's not press. Yeah. You do have some separation. You could run between spaces and zones, a la George Kittle, 104 yak yards in this game. Did he have 104 yak yards the entire season? And he's having the best season.
He's making fun of Kyle Shanahan because they never call tight end screens. He literally said they've called it one other time.
It's hard to call it when they're constantly doing press man-to-man. It's like, it is hard to call a screen against press man-to-man. It's just a thought. Like, Juwan Jennings, just work in the zone today. Just beautiful masterclass of the zone.
It looked like prime 2019. Every single catch is going for another 10, 15, 20, 30, just because there's no one in the area. And the Bears just looked lost and quite honestly disinterested. Yeah. Which goes back to the celebrating at the end of just like, they know.
Bad news in this game is that Ben Bartsch did get a...
He's done for the year. I mean, they haven't given a timeline on it, but he's in a walking boot. He's not coming back. If they make the playoffs, maybe, but they're not going to make the playoffs. I know. But it's a high ankle sprain, which usually takes 3-4 weeks anyway. So he's done... I would guess Banks he's in the concussion protocol. He'll probably be back, which,
is that a good thing?
But Bartsch was, there was definitely like a, damn, Bartsch was, every, people were aware.
Annoying.
People were aware that he was like actually leveling up this offensive line, which, you know, we like sort of joked about it. Like, really, Ben Bartsch?
A lot.
He looked really good. And that's a loss.
I just don't know where that came from. He didn't look this good in preseason. At least I don't remember. He certainly didn't look good. At best, he was forgettable.
Yeah, he wasn't notable, but he was like bulldozing.
He played two games. Well, one and a half.
Yeah.
And in that one and a half, he was the best offensive lineman on the team. Also, shout out Jalen Moore. What a steady Eddie. I almost feel like, here's an idea. Let him play right tackle.
I defended McKivitz for a lot of the season. I think he's had a good season overall. He got whooped by Montez Sweat today. He had a really hard time.
Not a hard thing to do. Montez Sweat's pretty good.
He's very good.
But
he's very good.
Jalen Moore is like a legitimately solid, like that's the idea of a McKivitz.
Yeah.
Like he won't make you any plays, but he's not going to like lose you a game.
They'll keep him, you know, they'll do the 3 year.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Let's go through some star chats here. Okay. This one I saw you roll your eyes at. So
yeah.
Again,
yeah.
First off, remember this is a zone game. Why do they have Ricky Pearsall? Man-to-man beater. The floor is yours, Jake.
Yeah. So there was one notable play. There were two plays, by the way, that you can't see on the, yeah. You know, the
TV
copy, right. Where one, like Brock could have taken a touchdown shot to him. He was splitting. He took Kittle. It was fine. It was a big gain. It didn't matter. Everything they were taking was working. So take the underneath, not a criticism, but there were at least two plays. You could have taken a shot to him. And he would have been open for a touchdown. On the one, I asked Purdy about it.
This is the one with the apparent miscommunication.
This was a scene. The angle, yeah. The angle they showed, I think, was like, it made it look like Pearsall just stopped running. Pearsall is running. It's not a post, but he's just, yeah. So he's just running straight downfield. He's running a seam, right? And he's supposed to arc it inside a little bit. But what he saw is he saw way open the middle of the field, cut it inside, and and he made that decision after the ball like had left Purdy's hand. So Purdy,
oh, I guess Jake's dead.
Purdy said, you know, he made the right call with that. Obviously, he's going to defend his. Obviously, he's going to defend his receiver, but,
Yeah.
I think that was a little overblown. He didn't stop running. The ball was behind him, so he slowed down and tried to turn around to catch it. He didn't stop running.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. It felt like it was a bad read. It was a blown opportunity, to be sure. Kind of classic situation for a quarterback and a wide receiver that have had very little time together.
Yeah.
Even when Pearsall has been now promoted into a role of significance, well, Brock Purdy has this shoulder thing and barely practices. So,
yeah.
Again, it's
it looks bad. It looks very bad. For sure. It looked terrible.
And you're wondering who's at fault because someone fucked up big time on that play. That's what it looks
right.
like. So, in no question, it looked like Brock threw it behind him because either Pearsall made the wrong read or Purdy.
They just don't have a good connection yet because Pearsall missed all the time in OTAs and
it's a double negative.
Training camp. They're not on the same page and I think that's at the core of Brock trust Jennings. He knows where Jennings is going to be. When he talked about it in his press conference,
it's easy to see where Jennings is going to go because he doesn't move so fast that you can misinterpret where he's going.
Right. But Brock quite literally, he's like, I just felt like really in sync with everybody, you know, Jennings and Kittle. And then, you know, left because they're just not on the same page. They're not connecting. Yeah.
That's okay. It's very reminiscent of early Aiyuk. Like, yeah. it's eerie.
There's a lot of nuance. And listen, Pearsall like was frustrated. I saw him in the locker room. Like he was.
Hey, unnecessary hold. He did not have a good game.
No.
The second that he stops getting open is the second that will go all the way in. That's what he is doing his job. The ball is never not going to come his way 100% of the time you get open. That's not how it works. But so long as he is consistently getting open on the routes that he is asked to run, of which who knows what percentage of those are actually routes where he could even get the ball based on the progression.
Right.
But so long as he continuously gets open during that, we're not going in on him because the production does not directly correlate to him doing his job correctly. Now, I don't think he had a good game because of the hold, but ultimately.
Yeah. But
bust, I think that's way too aggressive.
I also see like he looked down on himself. I saw Kittle like go over and. I didn't snoop, but I saw Kittle having like a moment with him where clearly Pearsall's like frustrated and he's having a, you know, sort of a heart to heart. But and I asked Kittle about it because I was like, you know, what do you talk about? How do you lift him up or whatever?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's like, He's like, he's fine. Like, he's doing what he's doing. The ball sometimes doesn't come your way. Also, when you're getting 200-something yards to Jennings and Kittle, I'd probably keep throwing it their way, especially they've been in the system forever. They know what the timing is. They know what the nuances are. And, yeah, that's the segue into Kittle. Dude is – I once criticized Kittle when they – I want to say it was 2022 when they were – it was like the season was going sideways. And it was like, is anyone going to step up as a leader? And I was like, I feel like Kittle needs to be that guy. And what so I misunderstood, right? Well, what I misunderstood at the time is like Kittle can seem disingenuous. And sometimes it's a little, he's putting it on for the cameras. But in terms of how he operates in the locker room, he is legitimately like a very sincere person and a very good leader who takes time with younger guys to make sure like people are right and does have a weirdly innate positivity that's kind of rare and hard to find. And it's pretty valuable when like it's a rough time. And that's beyond what he's doing on the football field, which is like, he's clearly the best tight end in the NFL. And, you know, as an all around tight end, what has it been, 5 years for the most part, he's been the best.
I think that's fair. 7,000 receiving yards, 500 catches. First 8 seasons, 3 guys to ever do it. Kelsey, Antonio Gates, George Kittle. 2 of those guys block. Antonio Gates may be about as good as it's ever been. I think that there are conversations to be had, but for Kittle, 2
of those guys
be,
block, and one of those guys waits until the fourth quarter and sits down a yard beyond the... Yeah. The sticks.
One of those guys has the best quarterback ever who lets him do whatever he wants. The other guy got a lot of those yards with Garoppolo and Mullins. So, yeah, I you're not going to get me, who grew up a Kansas City Chiefs fan, to tell you that Tony Gonzalez isn't the best. But, like, he isn't. Like, he's not. He just isn't. Tony Gonzalez is incredible. Antonio Gates was, I would argue, better during their time when they were contemporaries. And again, Kittle's ability to affect the run game is detrimental to him in getting the stats, and yet he still has the stats. I will hear, however, our brain damage buddy Gronk, who they are they going to put Gronk in the booth with Brady?
They should.
Just to see if they can make that work. Because
just a full ketamine ketotonic booth where you're just going, it's like I studied, this is gonna sound pretentious, but I studied abroad with a bunch of kids from Boston. Oh, yeah. And I watched the 28-3 Super Bowl with them. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the booth, just the worst commentary you've ever heard, just like, oh my god, KB.
George Kittle's a really great tight end, KB. You gotta get him the ball in big situations. That's what they're
tough
trying to
game
do
for the Bears, KB. They just a lot of points scored on them. Just tough game.
Caleb Williams having a really tough time finding his receivers. He's got great receivers, KB, but just having a really hard time. You gotta find a way to make it easy for him, KB.
Gotta find a way to move the sticks there, KB.
It's so bad. I am not looking forward. It was what, Kenny Albert and Jonathan Vilma on the call? Correct us in the comments.
I did not listen.
Well, we were there. I saw you there.
That's right. We listened to our own voices out loud.
I did listen to the Papa and Tim Ryan call. I do enjoy doing that because I am an audio learner. What other star chats do we need to get through here tonight? This is an interesting one. So from Antonio Baker, Isaac Garendo is a matchup nightmare against linebackers and safeties, and you saw a preview of tonight. I hope we see you a lot of the rest of the way. We'll pass that along to Isaac Garendo. It's true, and this is what I was going at, right? Like, this is the first time that they've had a running back there who, in earnest, has forced defenses to reckon with both the run and the pass. You have Mason back there. They're like, please, run a route. Yeah. That would be a win for us. You have McCaffrey back there, and, like, maybe they set up that way, but pretty quickly they're like, just let him run. Like, we'll be there in time. Just worry about him in the pass game. And now they have somebody who I would bet, just thinking back on the game that the Bears, if they were prioritizing anything, if they had a plan, that they were looking at, okay, stop Garendo in the run. And then they got burned in the pass game on two nice catches. And he was forcing, you know, he was breaking up that connective tissue of the cover three, whatever that's worth, with running routes.
I'm excited to watch. To
blitz when he's in pass pro because he's terrible at pass protection. He'll get better. He's terrible.
And it's like he's physical. He should be good, but I think he's so nervous. He just throws his hands really early and then guys go right by him. Like he's not good at waiting for the contact. I think that also just takes time. He might also never be good at it. And that might be the worst part of his game.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
If he continues to play. If you can't pass protect, you're not sticking in the league for a long time. Like you can get an opportunity and he's getting that and it's fun, but it doesn't matter how great you are. If you can't pass protect, you're a two down back and now your opportunities are limited. And now, hey, actually we like that third down back more. Kyle doesn't fuck around with that kind of stuff. So, it's kind of like with wide receivers, you have to block, no rock. With running backs, no pass pro.
Yeah.
No rock. I wish I had
nice. Well done. Well done.
On fire.
Where do you think this thing goes from here? Because Thursday night should just be the Rams are hot. The Niners are, their offense is.
They had a nice game today. I haven't watched it back in full yet, but I saw the final score.
44-42.
Yeah.
Insane. When Stafford and Kupp and Puka are like at their best, I don't know what you're supposed to really do. They're just going to win.
There's nothing that this team can do because, as Papa Jay points out, teams are just going at Ward, and they have not been convinced to do otherwise.
Green had a great game.
Renardo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I barely noticed him. He had a nice pass breakup. Otherwise, they didn't even bother. I'll say this. I don't know if Ian's assessment, which I see a couple other places, that Greenlaw being back will help. If it's anything like Huff, then yeah, of course. Huff was great today. The Rams are a different beast, and it does, again, this just really does feel like a one-off. The Rams aren't going to... The Bears, like, legitimately tried to make it easy. Everything they did was to play into the 49ers' hands, just giving the Niners opportunity after opportunity. The Rams aren't going to do that. Even though the Rams are kind of a stupid-ass, unserious team, they're not going to do that.
They are deeply unserious. I do appreciate this quick turnaround that we've got going here. I kind of love it for us because it's just like we just get to see if it's over or not immediately.
I mean, it's over. It's over.
I agree it's over. But they can make it interesting.
How interesting?
Mildly. Mildly interesting. Just because you know what? The thing is, they need the Seahawks to collapse, and Seahawks are facing the Packers and the Vikings. Both of them are home. They are hosting them. There's a lot of weird tiebreakers. Basically, they will lose every single tiebreaker to the Seahawks. So if the Seahawks, like I'm just gaming this out because we know it's cooked, but if it were to become something we had to pay attention to, the Seahawks have like basically every tiebreaker. If they win even one of these two games, it's cooked. The Cardinals are kind of a joke. The Rams are kind of a joke. The 49ers are kind of a joke. So that's why I mean, like, they could make it mildly interesting if the Seahawks were to lose the next two against tough teams. So
there's a conversation to be suppose. I am just hoping that on Thursday night they bust out these bad boys.
Oh,
do you remember Color Rush?
Oh, and the Niners are wearing the Niners were in black uniforms.
That was a Carlos Hyde game.
Oh, the Niners are wearing the jerseys that like every 12-year-old like 49ers fan account is like, dude, these would be so fire, brother.
Yeah.
If we just went all black and the gold helmets, these would be damn, brother.
This is the Rams all yellow uniforms. Bring them back. Bring back Color Rush. Divisional game on a Thursday night. I want Color Rush.
I do appreciate when the Seahawks just go with their neon marker jerseys.
I don't know, man. I'll say this about the Seahawks. Those throwbacks are sick. And then whenever they wear the gray pants, which is a little bit of an homage to the throwbacks, they look so much better.
Oh, they're sick.
The Niners are probably going to end up wearing the 90, what was it, 94?
Oh, yeah.
Throwbacks
again. The 94.
I'm not the biggest fan of those. Like,
really?
I like it if there's some, I guess it's 94, 2024. Okay, it's a four. But like they started wearing them a couple of years ago for no reason. Like I don't understand particularly why. Please let me know. And then they just keep wearing them. It's like you can't come up with anything.
I think they started wearing them in 2019 and everyone's like, these are dope. And so they just became part of their.
I think it was
like a, what was it, like the 75th anniversary, right? Or the 100th anniversary?
Yeah. And I guess they were wearing those. Was it the 100th anniversary? And then they were wearing those. Those were like the 75th anniversary jerseys.
Yeah. And then it was like the 100th anniversary. So they kept them and everyone's like, these are great. You know,
it's the tricky part is like, I don't like the white pants. I don't like the white pants. The Niners
My mom used to wear pants every game. My mom, whenever we grew up in New Jersey and we used to watch the Giants. My mom is a Giants fan. And every time the Giants wore white, she's like, they look like cowards. They should never wear white because the Giants would wear all white. And all white is just...
They didn't have blue pants?
No, I don't think so. I think the Giants would wear all white. And maybe I'm making that up.
No, but the Giants had silver pants.
Maybe you were just
confusing it by saying they looked like the Cowboys.
No. They looked like cowards. Oh, okay. Because whenever they would wear the white jerseys, my mom is like, they probably weren't wearing all white. Whatever. We're in Jersey talk.
I am so fascinated, so curious, and legitimately flabbergasted as to what will happen on Thursday. Thursday is ripe for the stupidest. There we go. That's accurate.
Nice.
It's not leaving anything. Your ass is already hanging out. It doesn't matter. It's so.
I assumed he was talking about you. Whatever.
Shitting the pants? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not about shitting the pants. It's about the swass.
Right. Swass. Right. Yeah. So like the actual game on Thursday.
Yeah. Back to the issues at hand. Black is slimming, but also betting nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. Thursday is
no idea.
A total chaos.
Do we have a number on it? Give me a second.
It could be a blowout on either side. Realistically, it'll probably end up being a close game. But I don't know how to preview this. I don't know. I don't have like a gut feeling one way or the other of how this will play out because the Rams are just sort of insane.
Okay. Niners minus 2.5, total 46.5.
That sounds about right.
I'm taking the under. No rhyme or reason. Just this feels stupid in that direction.
It feels like a sloppy game. A lot of missed chances, field goals. I don't know. I'm saying these out loud and I don't know. I'm trying these takes on to see how they feel. And I'm not sure. I don't really have a gut feeling because the Rams just went scorched earth offense and their defense looked nightmarish. And the Niners dominated the Bears, but the Bears are not even a real team. No. And they just gave the Niners the easiest possible chance by playing soft zone, the Niners' favorite zone, cover three. And then they just didn't run any of those simulated pressures to put pressure on the offensive line.
Can we point out that the Niners, I mean, it's pretty easy to get pressure against the Bears offensive line, but like the Niners got a lot of pressure. They were mixing it up.
The one sack from Gross Matos where he sacked, I forget which tackle it was, but he sacked Caleb and the left tackle.
Yeah, that's the dream. That's incredible. The nightmare if you're an offensive lineman, and the dream if you're a defensive lineman. Tackling your own quarterback is the nightmare.
They did it with Gross Matos. Yeah, and they haven't had Bosa, and they haven't had Trent Williams, and McCaffrey's out. Like they did some stuff. It's just the Bears, so it's like the most important stat: the Niners have not beaten a team at the time of the game that is 500 better than 500. They've not beat a winning team. The Seahawks have a winning record now. But at the time of the game, they did not. So
Rams come to town at 7-6. Does it all change today, Jake? On Thursday?
Thursday? Probably not.
Probably not.
But anything's possible. Possible in this stupid season.
The Rams played the Patriots close, got trounced by the Eagles, played the Saints close, and then just beat the Bills in a total shootout.
They might have had the weirdest schedule, because I was looking at all the tiebreakers and I was looking at the Rams schedule, and I was truly an insane season for them, because I know they had a lot of injuries early on with Kupp and Puka, which is most of it, and they just built around them.
They were 1-4, and their one win was that one against the Niners.
Yeah.
What is this team?
Yeah. Wait. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, they start off, lose, obviously, the season opener, lose to the Lions, get destroyed 41-10 by the Cardinals, eke out that terrible win over the Niners. They lose to the Bears. They lose to the Packers. They eke out one over the Raiders. They beat the Vikings by 10. They beat the Seahawks in overtime. They lose to the Dolphins by 8. Beat the Patriots by less than a touchdown,
yeah,
or by exactly a touchdown.
There's
get
no
destroyed by the Eagles. Beat the Rams. Beat the Saints. Just a weird, weird team. I don't know how they're 7-6.
At least the Niners aren't that weird. They're just not that good. And again, yeah, everything was laid out for them today. They took full advantage. I gotta make one final point here, and then we'll get out of everybody's hair. Fred. Not good. It's a rough game for Fred today.
I did not notice that.
He missed a bunch of tackles. They were going right at him. They were switching him to Will and letting Campbell play Mike. It was tough to watch. Campbell had a great game. I have a hard time believing that's going to be some sort of trend moving forward. Fred had a tough game against the Bears. I'm just looking at this and I'm going, if you were Kyle Shanahan, how would you attack this defense? You go at their linebackers, you go at their defensive tackles, and oh yeah, the guy putting together the game plan tomorrow for the other team, Sean McVay. I have a feeling he might do the same thing.
And Kyle's had an incredible record against Sean in the regular season. They have owned them.
Yeah.
We'll see. Except for the one time it actually mattered.
It seemed like it. Well, it's mattered before. A couple times it's mattered. I mean, I was just talking about this time.
The one actual time it mattered, and they would have probably won the Super Bowl. And
yeah. Yeah. One. It mattered in week 18 a couple of years back. That mattered. Well,
yeah, sure.
Okay. We need to start watching Rams tape. Now, if we stand any chance for Thursday, should we do a show on Tuesday, Jake?
I think we do probably a late show Tuesday, because that's when there's one day of media availability.
Right.
Do all that. Honestly, a Thursday week is great.
The best.
Because you're on to the Rams. You're moving on to the Rams. You get one day to watch tape, go in, talk to everybody, grind a little bit, and then break it down, and then Thursday we'll go live after the game, and then then we got a weekend.
No, a rare that weekend. Doesn't make any sense. Okay, so Tuesday 9 p.m. Pacific, we will set it up and talk to y'all then. Anything else we need to get to? No, we're leaving.
I think that's it.
All right, bye.
Appreciate you, folks.